Hey, my name's Gavin O'Mara. I'm the CEO and founder of FE News, and welcome to episode 2 of VocTech Futures. This is a co-produced live stream between UFO VocTech Trust and FE News. And today I'm joined by Patrick Dunn, who's going to be my co-anchor. How are you, Patrick?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. We've got a really, really interesting show today that is titled VocTech in the Prison Sector, Insights for Further Education. And we've got two really interesting guests. We're going to bring in a little bit. But Patrick, I want to have a chat to you first, sure. Because there's some interesting on all sorts of levels, really. I was going to double check my figures here. Just to put this into context for the audience, because this is going out to a wide range of audience across the whole of the sector. 42% of offenders are reported to have been permanently excluded from school, and only 17% of ex-offenders managed to get a job within a year of their release. Those are really shocking figures. Not going to get political about it, but I was really shocked when I found that. UFI, how are you working with the prison sector? How are you working with offenders to be able to help break this cycle?
Gosh, in lots of ways, really. So typically for this sector, I think about four themes. So we're using technology to get access to learning in all situations, and providing learning opportunities using technology to folks that like you've identified from the figures, may have a troubled relationship with learning education. And then we're using technology to tailor, to adapt learning, so that we say, you will get the learning that you really need, not some rubbish that someone dictates, but what you need to change your life, you know. Then we talk about, has that learning done you any good? How do we assess what you've learned? Are you any different from when you started? And then finally, if you are different, we hope you are, from when you started this learning that we've tailored to you, are you going to get a job as a result? And the projects that we deal with typically cover one or two of those themes each. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about each one of them. So at a very high level, that's kind of what we're doing. But of course, it's worth just saying that we respond to the ideas and to the innovations of the folks that apply to us, all right? And it's a wonderful opportunity. It's a wonderful situation to be in, to have people that really know this sector and say, look, do you know what we need? We need this. And we go, blimmin' heck, that's interesting. We'll look into it.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. I wonder if we could bring in our guests. We've got Ruth Walker from the Wyatt Grow, Dan Brown from Mega Nexus. I wonder if you could both join us. Hi, Ruth. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Morning.
So, I wonder if we could have a chat through different ways that you're working with UFI. Dan, I wonder if we could start with you, because it's particularly interesting what you guys are doing at Mega Nexus. Maybe if you could briefly explain what Mega Nexus is about, and particularly what you're then doing around virtual campus with offenders. It would be really interesting to share that with the audience.
Yeah, Mega Nexus is about supporting the rehabilitation, particularly of vulnerable people. And of course, there are a few people more vulnerable than offenders in custody. What we're doing with the virtual campus, we've been working for nearly a decade supporting learners in custody in prison to get access to educational materials through technology. The challenge that we face, and that we've been supported on by UFI, is to allow those offenders to access that learning in cell rather than on a learning wing or in an educational area. Because when people are locked up in a cell for up to 20 hours a day with nothing to do, they're not going to rehabilitate as fast as if they've got, as when they've got learning materials. And what we're doing with UFI support is providing in-cell technology. There's a couple of ways we're doing that, and we're doing that both by online in-cell and synced technology in-cell. And that, we think, is going to transform learning in prisons and help people when they go out to get jobs, as you've referred to earlier.
You said online and synced. How do you mean by synced? Maybe if you could explain that for the audience who may not be aware.
Yeah, wiring up prisons is challenging. If you take some of the old Victorian institutions and establishments, they're difficult to wire up with secure Wi-Fi. So we're enabling both secure Wi-Fi when it's available, particularly with the modern establishments, and devices that are available offline in cell that they then could be connected when people leave cell. And we can roll that out much, much faster. And we believe we're going to do that in the coming couple of years very fast. And have to say that the technology we've built, thanks to what we've been working on with UFI and the Ministry of Justice, looks like it's going to achieve that rapidly.
That's really interesting. I want to come back to lots of stuff around that in a minute, then, because I think it's a hot potato here you got around sort of the prison sector, because there's political parts around it, isn't there? And there's also the human part of it as well. Ruth, could you explain some of the things that you've been doing around virtual reality and how you've been bringing the workplace into prisons and how that's been helping offenders?
Yeah, thanks, Gavin. So we started with the challenge that, well, first of all, a lot of the people that NIACRO, which is an organisation that, a voluntary organisation which supports people both in prison and upon release in the community. And we started with the challenge of finding it really difficult, working particularly in the Category A security prison in Northern Ireland, HMP McGabbery, to get anybody out to a work placement. And we had one guy out in about 18 months, no, must be 2 years ago now. And then the amount of time and effort that it involved was so disproportionate. We thought this is not a sustainable model to try to enable people to get day release for work placements. But yet people wanted to build their experience, particularly in construction jobs. So the folks at NIACRO as an organisation support with their employability in prison and immediately upon release. And construction was the single largest destination of a sector that they were interested in getting work in. And 30% of those that we were getting into jobs were getting jobs in construction. But they weren't necessarily sustaining those jobs because they didn't necessarily have a sense of what is it going to be like for me to be on a construction site day and daily. And they also needed an initial qualification to get onto site. So we had the dual challenge of how do they get some experience before they leave prison, and how do they get this first qualification that will get them onto a building site? And so it was through conversations with a really super software company in Northern Ireland, Consonterial, and with our partnership with the Construction Industry Training Board here in Northern Ireland, CITBNI, that we put through introducing VR, we put those two things together. So through the VR, they can get onto the site virtually, get some experience of what it feels like to be on site, to have the foreman showing you how to put on your PPE, to walk up ladders, to work at heights, and to be aware of the hazards that are around the site, but also to get the basic qualification that would be needed at a level one in construction health and safety.
And how's that gone?
Yeah, well, it's gone fantastically well in terms of development and in terms of learning for us as partner organisations and in terms of testing our product. What hasn't gone quite so well this year, as you will understand, is actually getting the product into the prisons to test it and to let people in prison get their hands on headsets and use it. The Northern Ireland Prison Service, we are a Northern Ireland charity, so we're working alongside the Northern Ireland Prison Service, and it has rightfully been very proud of its record in terms of keeping COVID out of the prisons, but that has come at a bit of a cost to organisations like NIACRO, who haven't had the access that we would have had up until now. But just yesterday, we got the green light to go back into prisons to start delivering training again, so we're really excited about that. But what we have been doing in the meantime is testing it and trialing it with folks that have been released from prison, because really in developing this concept, we realised that a training tool that takes people through the basics that they need and a little bit of insight into what it feels like to be in an environment, it's useful to beyond prisons. And so the CITB and I, who have partnered with us, are really enthused about using this tool in careers promotion across the board. And not just in a prison environment. So we've been testing it with folks that have been released and getting their feedback and sense of how it's useful to them.
Yeah, that sounds really, really cool. Patrick, can I bring you back in? So we talked about those four themes. So just to highlight again, hopefully I've got this right: access, tailoring, assessment, and training for employment. So
yep.
Access is obviously a major challenge in sort of the prison environment. And as Dan highlighted, you've got some prisons which are a little bit older in design than others and have got restrictions in different ways compared to other sites. I didn't know if there's anything you wanted to sort of share around sort of access issues which you've had as challenges, or maybe Dan and Ruth could maybe sort of share a bit more around that, about how we can sort of learn from that, really.
Well, I think Dan will elaborate on this and articulate it much better than I can, but what I've been impressed with the way that MegaNexus are dealing with this really difficult environment is the sheer variety of different ways we've got to get stuff into that complex environment. So, you know, sometimes there's Wi-Fi, not often. Sometimes you have to have an upload download system. Sometimes you have to have it on the way. Sometimes, you know, it's like a massively complex jigsaw puzzle in which we have to find, what's the word, multifarious, diverse, incredibly different solutions to make sure the prisoners get the stuff they need. I suspect I should probably hand over to Dan at this point, because you'll explain that better than me.
Well, I agree entirely. I mean, it's incredibly diverse solutions, obviously, for incredibly diverse people as well. And, you know, one of the things we've had to do is ensure that the software personalises to the individual and tries to understand their needs and also the needs of the sentence that have been provided. So it's a mass of different factors that are coming together. And again, with different devices and different security restrictions, whilst people are in custody. And one of the things that Ruth's been talking about is about when people leave. And ironically, from time to time, you know, we find that actually there is a level of focus and concentration on the individuals in the prison. But when they leave, there's nothing at all. So people can fall off a cliff. So we've got to ensure that whilst people are provided for in cell, in custody, what happens when they leave? Can they take their details with them? Can that information carry on? Can their learning journey progress to getting a job, which is one of the things you first alluded to, Gavin. So all of that has to be factored in with all the different organisations and individuals who are trying to work together, from the probation service to the prison officers to the support agencies who are trying to ironically get into the prisons and get access. And one of the things we're working on is how can those institutions and organisations outside the prisons get access into the prison and indeed in cell, so they can provide support directly and communicate directly and give help whilst an individual's in cell, so that they know the people outside, and when they go outside they've made some connection and contact with them.
And can I ask, with qualifications that you're sort of delivering in cell, because it's really, really interesting, like you said, if someone is locked up for 20 hours a day, which is not a very pleasant experience,
up to 20 hours a day, but yeah, not uncommon.
It's a really, really long time, particularly with COVID. I know those times then also, you know, increased much more to be at the upper end. What are the successes that you've seen? And B, what are the sort of courses that people are looking to do? And how do you sort of match those to jobs on the outside and it's sort of having a positive outcome?
Well, yeah, I mean, the great success is, as I think everyone will agree on this, is actually getting people into a job that they want to do when they leave. Because that's the thing that stops people going back into crime. And when you hear some of the stories of people who haven't succeeded so much, it is often that there just wasn't the available resources out there, where they didn't have the opportunities to get a job, and then they didn't have the money, and then crime was an easy option. So it's really getting them into a job, and then it's finding the jobs that are available for the relevant people in the local geography is another part of it. So what are the jobs that are available, and what are the skills that people are interested in and capable of? So all of that matching is part of a personalization engine that we've developed with an implicit and explicit form of assessment, which includes assessing and understanding what people say they want, and also following what they're doing, what they're enjoying, how they're progressing. So I think the ideal is people getting access to the courses, both vocational and qualificational, and then embarking on that journey, and then finding jobs, which they can do on the virtual campus when they're in custody, applying for jobs. And if the services are set up right, people have been provided with day release to go for an interview, and then they've had the job on release on the day they've gone out, which is fantastic. So that's what makes our hearts sing.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. Can I ask everyone, Patrick, can I maybe start with you around, Dan, you mentioned there about assessment. So there's a whole movement outside of, you know, in education, full stop, around rethinking assessment, looking at assessment in different ways, pandemic affected schools and colleges and universities, but also prisons. How has assessment changed within the prison sector? Patrick, did you want to sort of kick off?
Gosh, now this is such a huge one. Right, so we can look at the narrow definition of assessment. It's an exam, it's a test. Maybe you have to run through a game or a simulation and achieve some kind of completion on it. That's a kind of narrow view of saying, are you the same as you were before? Have you achieved some kind of goal? Can we certify your achievement? Okay. I would regard this, and this is a personal view, I would regard this as one end of a spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is a very sort of diverse, messy view that says what we're going to do is we're going to use, I mean, typically things like machine learning, AI, to figure out from a kind of messy bucket of stuff that you've given us whether you're the same or not, all right? And so I'm going to sort of jump into dangerous area here. So I hate the way Facebook chucks things at me because it thinks it knows me. It uses all sorts of data that it pinches from all sorts of sources, and it advertises to me because it thinks it knows me. And little by little, damn it, it does know me. It's actually assessing me. It's assessing me, right? And that's at the other extreme from all these kind of, you know, groovy, interesting way of you know, using games and simulations, whatever. The other extreme is we just use damn clever new technology to look at everything that a person does, whether they're a prisoner or not. This is entirely applicable to all aspects of life and all types of learning. We look at the data that they spit out and that they do a lot of it accidentally, and we say, good Lord, we just noticed actually you're really quite good at negotiating. I bet you didn't know that. And that's a completely different way of assessing. And we've done a couple of really interesting projects. There's one called Game Academy that basically takes what people accidentally reveal about themselves, while they're playing games. And we say to them, do you know what? You're brilliant at negotiating and you're quite good at teamwork, but you actually need to give credit to other people in a more sort of charitable way. And it's very granular and very precise and frankly, really spooky. But what it is, it's a completely different type of assessing.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting actually. Ruth, what have you seen around assessment and how that sort of changed in the prison environment?
Well, I suppose in the prison environment, one of the things that ultimately people are really interested in is assessing the extent to which whatever support or interventions people have gone through, has it helped them to avoid reoffending? And that, if you like, rightly or wrongly, is still kind of the holy grail of assessing in terms of people who have offences. And that's a very difficult thing to do. So a couple of years ago, NIACRO worked with the Department of Justice NI's data lab, and we put through about 100 people that had been through our employability support against a control group who had received no support. And there was found to be about a 12%, reduction in the likelihood of reoffending amongst people that had been through our programs, which doesn't sound huge, but it is really quite statistically significant. And so I suppose there's that big holy grail of are people less likely to offend because they've been supported in a certain type of way. And then of course there's all sorts of other assessments that we would use to try to help people think. And I'm really interested, Patrick, in thinking about that more subliminal kind of, what are you good at and what are your strengths? Because perhaps as an organisation, we're still using more traditional tools, such as some of the assessment tools to help people think through, well, what are my strengths? What are my skills? What motivates me? What would I love to see myself doing in the future?
Yeah, that's cool. Dan, how about you? I'm interested because if it's you're looking at an in-cell system, and you know, traditional assessment would be, you know, wait till, you know, the summer. Do you know what I mean? Until you sort of do an exam. But someone could be moving around, you know, different institutions, or could be moving like sort of where they're going to be, you know, their cell. They could be, you know, moving across the country. How's it been for you with assessment and COVID and everything at the moment?
Well, I think it's the interesting thing. If I bring in an angle here, I think everyone will agree with it, that if we talk to service users and you mention the word assessment, you'll get a feedback that says enough or more fulsome words to that effect. Because what's happening in prisons is the individuals will move from prison to prison to prison to prison out into the community and will get assessed again and again and again and again, often with exactly the same assessment that just gets lost. And so one of the things we've been working on very powerfully is to ensure that that data with consent is shared with all the requisite parts of the prison service and other external organizations. And I think that's one of the things that technology can do and should do, is stop this endless cycle of pointless, needless assessments, which really does upset and frustrate the service users without benefit. And I think that's one of the things when we've worked on user groups, that's one of the key things. We're working with a couple of the organizations now, which are run by ex-service users, and they're saying that's one of the things we've absolutely got to provide, and we are providing that. So you get an assessment in cell, and that assessment with consent is shared to as many parties as the individual wants.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. I think a really good point as well around, you know, sometimes we're disassessing for constantly. So stepping out of you know, like the prison environment and the secure environment, which is really interesting. Yeah, that original stat I said at the beginning, 42% of offenders reported to have been permanently excluded from school. They didn't have a very good education experience, basically. And now you're sort of bringing in different ways for people to engage in education in a positive way. But there's people outside of the prison service who also have had a really terrible experience with education when they were younger. And we're now asking them to upskill, reskill when we've got a skills crisis in the UK. What can everyone learn from your experiences of working in the prison sector of how to be able to make education accessible to all, how to be able to deliver education in ways that is able to be for everyone? If you can put it into a secure Victorian prison, or if you can deliver virtual reality to people in a prison which had no COVID before and has got all these restrictions, surely we can do that in all sorts of different environments that haven't got those restrictions. What can we learn? Patrick?
Can I chip in? Well, you know what? I would say this, wouldn't I? Because I'm from UF. I mean, these, we can take each of those four themes and we say, blimey, if you can even start approaching them in a prison, in a secure set, you can approach them in the general world. So access, give people learning where they need it. Yeah. Not in some different distant classroom, which is like half an hour's bus ride away. Give people access where they need it. Adapt what they're getting in every situation, in a classroom, in a primary school, in an apprenticeship situation. Adapt, yeah? Learning is learning delivered by technology can be reduced to tiny objects. Get those objects collected in a way which gives people what they really need. And then measure using, goodness knows, anywhere on my spectrum, all the way from extremely formal to utterly bizarre and science fictionish. You know, find a place on that spectrum which is going to say to them, you've done it. Fantastic. You're different from how you were. And then try and connect that to employment. Now, of course, not all education and training is to do with employment. But these themes are pervasive. OK. And in a way, having the challenge to address these themes in a secure sector with you know, some of the impossible challenges that Dan particularly faces, you know, in attempting to deal with infrastructural issues. If we can do it in the prison sector, then let's use the sort of very bright, powerful lights, as it were, that the prison sector illuminates these issues with, and apply elsewhere.
Mm. Yeah, certainly, with us at NIACRA over the last 18 months since COVID, we support actually more people in the community than we do in prisons. Mm. We support about 600 in prisons every year, but about over 900, probably more than 1,000, in fact, in the community post-release. And so that is more of our work than the prison's work. And certainly this year, some of those things, Patrick, that you just said, we would really see reflected in how we have changed our practice. We've discovered we can be much more flexible with how we support learners. They don't need a face-to-face meeting every week necessarily, a bit of phone contact, something that just keeps them in contact with us, but doesn't feel too onerous for them. to help them continue their learning has proved really beneficial. We have seen a huge uptake, more than 100% uptake in the high speed courses, the short, sharp online courses that give people those basic qualifications that they need, be that in health and safety or food hygiene or manual handling, etc. So we have certainly seen some of those small ways in which we have adapted our practices that help people to realise that they can take the learning that suits them and be flexible and adaptable in the ways in which they're supported. A lot of the people that we would support would have been put off in the past by something that's too interventionist, and they've really appreciated just the odd phone call. Are you staying on track? Are you keeping up to date with your learning? And a more hands-off approach has maybe helped generate a bit more independence from some of the people that we've supported over the past 18 months.
And Dan, what would you like to share? Because obviously you're highly, highly experienced at very, you know, secure and restricted environments. What would you like to share for everyone in across the sector?
Well, Patrick was talking a bit about those sort of four components, and I think there's the accessibility. Maybe it's worth looking at where this has got to go. And I think across the whole educational landscape, what's really highlighted by the offender group is a need for engagement initially, so that people who have limited educational experience can get hooked. And what we're trying to do is get people hooked to stuff that's not spice, but hooked to education. And if we can do that, and we can get people engaged and then progressing through the right content in the right way with the right reinforcement methods, which is sort of, you know, people talk about gamification, and I think that kind of came and has sort of drifted a bit. But I suspect that there's going to be some incredible learnings in the learning industry about where that gamification reinforcement type processes can work really well with the consent and understanding of the individuals who are engaged on it to do something very, very powerful. So it's things like bite-sized learning, things that give us a ongoing satisfaction to people with a sense of progression, with an understanding of progression that's then got utility. And if we can put all that together into the relevant content packages, I think that's going to be applicable way outside of the prisons, but demonstrated and evidenced by a population that hasn't got a lot of experience, but then gets really into it. And when we get the feedback from people who are very smart people who had a very poor start to life about how they got hooked in a positive way, that's where I think things are going to go. And that's where it's going to be applicable to young people, kids as who are in the more traditional educational settings.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. I like the way you're saying that it's being hooked onto the right things and around, yeah, how to sort of engage and move them really, really forward. We're nearly out of time. If you had one wish and one wish only for what you want to see for the future of education and learning in a secure environment, Patrick, what would you want it to be?
Dan triggered off a really interesting thought there, and this is applicable to the much wider context and FE generally, which is, can we just break down the barrier between learning and not learning? I love Dan's point about, you know, it's about hooking people and engaging them. Well, can we just destroy that barrier? Let's just, you know, forget it. It's just everywhere. You know?
Yeah, I love that. Dan, what would your one big dream be?
I want to see in-cell learning in every prison, in every cell in this country. I think if we can do that, I think it will transform rehabilitation and give people a massive advantage in their second shot at living better.
Yeah, that's cool. Ruth, how about you?
Yeah, so I suppose in the Northern Ireland context, one thing we would love to see is a better continuity between the services that the FE colleges provide in custody and a better continuity for those people as they move out and are encouraged to continue with FE when they leave custody. But I also really mirror a lot of what NIACRA does in prisons is that sense of engaging people in something, whatever that may be, and not necessarily having that formal. I really like, Patrick, what you're saying about breaking down those barriers between what's seen as formal learning and what is seen as just engaging people and helping them think about life more widely.
Yeah, no, that's great. Our time is gone, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Thank you, audience. Thank you. Really, really inspired you. Patrick, thank you so much for today. This is totally co-produced. Patrick has been absolutely brilliant in the background. Thomas, I know you're listening. Thank you so much for all your help as well. Dan, thank you for joining us. Ruth as well. Effie Newside, Leah, thank you for making the magic happen in the background. Mm-hmm. Kelly and Finley, thank you so much for all of the support you've done on this, making this episode happen. We'll see you same time next week for episode 3 of VocTech Futures. See you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.